Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Beep!
Today is December 14th, 2014, and this is episode 69, Expletive Deleted, a look at censorship in games. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week we're talking a little bit about a somewhat controversial topic, censorship in games, so buckle in and get ready for that. But first we have very, very sad news. We dedicate this episode to the memory of Ralph Baer, the developer of what is considered the first video game console, and generally considered to be the father of video games. Mr. Baer passed away at the ripe old age of 92.
Oh, wow.
And per this really incredible article on Gamasutra, Baer developed the Brown Box, and, you know, eventually actually designed what was released as the Magnavox Odyssey in 1972. Obviously this leads into Pong and Atari and everything, so we wouldn't be here if not for Ralph Baer, this is definitely a very sad time in the games industry, and our heart and thoughts go out to the people you left behind.
Indeed.
With that having been said, let's move on to happier topics and start up our follow-ups. Slaggy?
Concept has announced that Mighty No. 9 is approaching the end of development. It is presently in a pre-final beta stage. The current build has everything from the main story stages to online race battles, challenge mode, and other features. They're currently working on the game's ending and doing some debugging and visual tweaks.
Excellent. That's great.
Yeah, the link on the article on Silicon Era has some screenshots, and yeah, it looks fantastic.
Excellent, excellent. We also have word here on another big Kickstarter game that Double Fine's Broken Age Episode 2 is now going to be releasing in early 2015. You may recall that Act 2 was initially going to be releasing this year, but unfortunately, things sort of slipped up, and now they're really looking at early 2015 for that release. So it is what it is. As long as the game is good, certainly I don't mind the delay.
We got confirmation from Atlas that Etrian Odyssey and Mystery Dungeon will be released as Etrian Mystery Dungeon in the Americas for $40, both at retailers and on the eShop for $40.
Excellent. We also have word here that Bravely Second is releasing in Japan on April 23rd. Obviously that's not too far off, and it is going to be getting a Grand Collector's Edition.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this Collector's Edition that Japan is getting looks really great. It comes with an art book, it comes with a novel, it comes with an in-game code for a new outfit for Agnes. Just some really cool stuff here. I hope they bring this special edition to North America, because, we did get a collector's edition for the first Bravely Default, so
yeah.
Fingers crossed on that one.
Nintendo has announced that they are very likely to retire some of the amiibo after the first run.
Yeah, this has been a big news story this week. Amiibo are basically the ones that aren't mainline characters, as we've known for a little while, are only going to be getting one shipment, basically. I'm not a big fan of this. I love Amiibo. I already have like 8 of them, and I was hoping to get all of them, but it sort of looks like that's not going to be a possibility, with Marth, Wii Fit Trainer, and Villager from the first wave already being very hard to come by.
Yeah. And I at this point won't try to collect them all because it's going to be impossible, so I'm just going to get the ones that I like, I guess.
We also have word here that Devil Survivor 2 Record Breaker will be releasing in North America in early 2015. This is a game that we've actually been talking about here on GameBuoy, I feel like, since the first episode, practically. This is the 3DS version of the 2DS, of the original DS game, Devil Survivor 2 Shin Megami Tensei. The Japanese release of this game, as we've talked about here on the show, has been delayed for years. The Japanese release, of course, being called Devil Survivor 2 Break Record.
Right.
Finally, that game is coming out, and we have, gotten a localization confirmed for release early next year, so very excited about that.
Indeed.
We also got an update on the status of The Last Guardian in last week's issue of Dengeki PlayStation. Dengeki PlayStation talked to a bunch of developers about what the next year looks like in their sort of PlayStation world. And Fumito Ueda-san, whom is of course the director of The Last Guardian, said, and I quote, "The Last Guardian, by which I mean all of the hardships and unforeseen amount of time required than what was originally thought, was his most memorable PlayStation title." He then followed up a little bit, though, with, "Talks with Sony Computer Entertainment on The Last Guardian have been ironed out, and we're making progress under completely new conditions. I'm also working on some other things that I'll hopefully be able to show in time if progress is smooth." So, you know, we didn't get a lot of information, but hearing from Ueda that the issues with Last Guardian have been ironed out and that they're making progress now, to me, is a great thing. You know, this article from Kotaku sort of speculates that we may be hearing soon about Last Guardian being a PS4 game. I can't really comment on that necessarily, but I must admit it does seem likely at this point in time.
All right. We've got a release date for the first episode of Resident Evil Revelations 2. As Joystick says, it comes out right after Jill Valentine's Day for PS4 and PS3 on February 17th in North America, and then the next day on the Xbox platforms and Steam, as well as the European release for PlayStation. And there will be new episodes rolling out until March 10th, 11th.
Yeah, the episodes are going to be released weekly, and they will be $6 each, or €6, £5. We also have word here, as many of you likely have already noticed, that Hearthstone's Goblins vs. Gnomes expansion is now available.
That's awesome.
Anyone who logs in before December 19th will get 3 free expansion card packs. So if you play Hearthstone, even just casually, be sure to log in before December 19th.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to do that as soon as this episode's over.
We also have word that The Witcher 3 has been delayed to May 2015. CD Projekt Red was previously intending to release the game in February, but the studio said it sees, quote-unquote, many details that need to be corrected.
Oh, good. At least they're not pulling a newbie.
Yeah, right. I would definitely rather a game get delayed by a couple months than to see a bug-ridden, unplayable mess released. So I think this is a good thing.
Nice.
And last, but certainly not least, the PlayStation Vita is going to be getting Disney Infinity 2.0, along with a very special couple of little items. The portal pad that you will use with the game in order to import your Disney Infinity figures is actually going to be a Bluetooth device for PlayStation Vita. This is interesting, of course, because the portal for all of the other consoles is USB-based. We don't yet have word as to whether or not this Bluetooth base will work with the Bluetooth-compatible consoles PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 3, but something else the Vita is getting is an exclusive black-suited Spider-Man.
Hey!
So that's actually really exciting. I don't know yet if that black-suited Spider-Man will be able to be used in other versions of the game. I'm hoping it can, because that for me would be reason enough to buy this game on Vita, I gotta be honest. If I could take my black-suit Spider-Man that came with my Vita version of the game and still use that character in the PS4 version, that for me would be a huge incentive here.
Nice.
And that about does it for our follow-ups this week, so let's move on to...
News. 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 Oh my god, news.
Slaggy, I know you're super into this first one, why don't you kick us off?
Do you want to play some Scene Star? It doesn't have to be Scene Star. Okay, so Scene Star Frozen has been related...
Has been related.
Scene Star Frozen has been revealed by the European ratings board, PEGI. So,
and after the PEGI unintentional reveal, Joystick contacted Sony for more information, and the publisher did confirm Scene Star Frozen will be coming to the PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4, but that they have nothing else to announce about the title at this time.
Yeah. Cash grab!
Sega's hit free-to-play social mobile strategy RPG,
whoa,
Chain Chronicle,
it's a mouthful,
which is huge in Japan, is now available in the US, UK, Canada, and Australia.
Fantastic.
Sega also states that additional territories will follow, and this is mostly notable, first off, because this game has beautiful art, and second, because it's actually, like, a lot of fun. And the free-to-play elements aren't too bad. I've put in, like, 15 hours on this thing, and I've never paid any money, so... I think it's a really cool game. There was recently an episode of Sega Hard Girls about it. It's a cool game, and if you're okay with the idea of free-to-play, I would definitely recommend you check it out. It's probably one of the better games in that field.
Nice. Keisuke Kikuchi, who is a producer at Koei Tecmo.
Is that the new Bandai Namco?
Apparently. I almost said Temco. So anyway, he might be familiar to you from his work on Deception and Fatal Frame, those franchises. And he has announced in the recent issue of Dengeki PlayStation that there is a new Deception game in development.
Excellent. Yeah, he says they are currently preparing to make an announcement for it soon. I am a huge fan of the Deception series. I've talked about it here on the show quite a few times. I am super, super, super stoked to hear about this. I cannot wait. This is, for me, this is a must-buy. We also got word that the Nitro Plus franchises are getting a crossover fighting game. This is going to be developed by Examu, whom you might be familiar with from such games as Arcana Heart and Aqua Plaza?
Aubrey Plaza.
Ah! And you'll be playing as characters such as Nitro Plus's mascot, Super Sonico, Saber from
Sega's
the
mascot.
Saber from the Fate Stay Night series, Ein from Phantom of Inferno, Mora from a game I really can't pronounce, Vampire Zidja Vigigonia? I am not actually sure what that is, I'm gonna have to be honest with you. But I like Phantom of Inferno, I like the Fate series, so I'm looking forward to this, and obviously I love fighting games,
yes.
So.
It's called Nitro Plus Blasters, Heroine Infinite Duel.
Excellent. It'll be releasing in arcades in Japan sometime in 2015. You are sure to hear about it more on our show.
In anime buoy news, a Samurai Warriors anime is going to be premiering on TV Tokyo in Japan on January 11th.
Although no announcement has been made, given the current state of the anime industry, I'm sure those of you in other parts of the world will be able to watch this on Crunchyroll or something.
Yeah, so if you need your Samurai Warriors fix, then yum.
Square Enix made an announcement that I'm very, very, very excited about.
Yes!
Square Enix is finally spinning off the Theater Rhythm series to non-Final Fantasy properties, and they're starting with Theater Rhythm Dragon Quest.
Yes!
This is going to be a 3DS game. It's going to be releasing in Japan on March 26th, which is just a couple months away, and they'll be debuting the game next weekend at the annual Jump Fiesta event. So please look forward to it, and you can expect to hear a whole lot about Theater Rhythm Dragon Quest here on Game Buoy in the future.
Indeed. Now we just need, Theater Rhythm Kingdom Hearts?
That's the one I'm hoping for.
Someone on Silicon Era says, oh, I'll be waiting for Theater Rhythm Drakengard.
Yeah, no, the Drakengard and Nier series, which are kind of connected, have incredible music. Like, some of the best music of that era of console.
If you are a fan of Final Fantasy X and X-2, and you just can't get enough of the HD remaster, you'll be able to get it on PS4, coming to North America and Europe this spring. At a price of $49.99 in North America, we're guessing probably like 50 euros or pounds or whatever. So, yeah, I actually missed out on it for PS3, so I'll probably pick it up for PS4.
Excellent. In other Jump Fiesta news, we're also going to see the gameplay reveal of Naruto Shippuden Ultimate Ninja Storm 4, which is going to be a PS4
game. Wow, they're
on
4 already?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the Ultimate Ninja series is, like, super well-loved, so they pump out games every, you know, year and a half. And, you know, they continue to do pretty well, so it's not that surprising. The official game announcement was made in Weekly Shonen Jump, as these kinds of games typically are. We have a scan, which, you know, looks beautiful. The screenshots look, again, just like with the PS3 iterations of the series. You can't really tell the difference between them and the actual animation from the show. So I'm really looking forward to this, and we should have more information on it after next week.
I wonder if this will be the last one since the anime is now over.
Well, you know, the manga ended a few months ago. The anime is ending, like, next week, I want to say?
Oh, okay.
We have Naruto movie The Last that just opened up in Japanese theaters last weekend. But Kishimoto-san, the mangaka that does Naruto, is preparing a short series following up on the adventures of from what I understand, there is going to be also a series of novels based around the time period between the ending, which if you've read the ending, you know what I'm talking about, and if you haven't, don't worry about it. as well as another movie that will be based on those other sort of next generation of shinobi. So, you know, the Naruto series is ending, but it's not over yet. So I definitely think there will be at least one more Ultimate Ninja Storm based on that content next year.
Man, that was a long-running manga and show.
And last, but certainly not least, we have two pieces of super fresh information for you here. This morning, during the Saga series 25th anniversary Nico Nico Dolga live stream, Square Enix announced two new games in the Saga series. The first is a PC mobile social browser game called Imperial Saga, which they claim is going to be a full-featured, like, story-based RPG that just happens to have online social elements. But as well as that, we're also getting a game that is currently tentatively titled Saga 2015, and that's going to be a PlayStation Vita game.
The art looks so pretty.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Saga series, even if I think it's often, it's kind of awful sometimes, but that has traditionally been Square Enix's, like, experimental JRPG playground, so I'm interested to see them play in that field again, and the art is always super good. The art for the series is typically done by Tomomi Kobayashi-san, and again, the work that we have seen for Saga 2015 is just gorgeous. So that's something I'm really looking
forward to. Now, is this the surprise announcement they had?
It could have been this. It could have been Dragon Quest Theater Rhythm.
Because they specifically said a new RPG that was worked, right?
I think that might have been more inferred than anything. They had just said a new title that wasn't a remake. So, yeah, either way, I'm really excited. Some really great Square Enix news this week, and I'm happy to see Saga come back.
Yeah, and it's kind of had a spotty Western release, huh?
I wouldn't say that so much. Most of the Saga games have ended up making it out here. Yeah, I mean, you know, we haven't gotten some of the remakes, but in terms of the core games, I think we've got all big ones.
Oh, huh.
All right, well, moving on, I want to talk a little bit about an event that happened last week. This was the Game Awards. You may recall, we were talking here on the show that we were very excited that Jeff Keighley was putting together a video game awards show that was supposed to sort of break from the Doritos gatiness of it all and focus a little
Doritos
bit more.
Doritos and do get your rewards in Call of Duty.
Focusing a little bit more on the actual merit of games and celebrating the craft. And Slaggy, let's talk for a minute, because I know that you watched this program as well. Let's talk for a minute about the awards show overall. Slaggy, what were your overall impressions of the game, the first annual celebration of the Game Awards?
You know, I feel like they tried to actually, you know, look at a wider variety of games than historically would have been represented on these sorts of award shows.
VGAs, bro!
Yeah. You know, like we had talked about, the Game of the Year candidates included Bayonetta 2 and other such titles. So, you know, I really feel like they were trying to have a wider lens and recognize that, you know, unlike what Spike TV may have thought, you know, there's more than just Call of Duty.
Yeah, gaming isn't just AAA.
Yeah, well said, well said. And, you know, there were a few problematic elements, mostly the whole idea of a social gamer, which Total Biscuit ended up winning. And, you know, not to get too involved in that, but, you know, there's been some unpleasantry with, you know, the Gamergate saga that he's been involved in, so, you know, that was a little problematic, very problematic maybe, but, you know, I'm not trying to discuss that too much.
Yeah. I saw quite a few people on Twitter who said that was the point where they were turning the Game Awards off.
Which is unfortunate because it got really good after that.
Yeah, you know, there's a really touching moment involving the announcement of a new King's Quest game, which, you know, we're going to get to in just a minute, but I definitely wanted to talk about, you know, Roberta Williams came out and her husband, and, you know, they obviously, like, created practically like a whole genre.
Yeah, they're responsible for adventure games, really.
And they made adventure games what they are, you know.
Indirectly responsible for survival horror in a way.
Yeah, yeah. If they didn't themselves originate the genre, they certainly pioneered how to make the genre work. So it was really touching to see them come out and be treated super respectfully in, like, a live broadcast event.
Yeah, and for a female developer to be recognized for her contribution.
Yeah, yeah, I think Tim Schafer even made a joke about, you know, LOL, the internet guys are gonna hate me. for, you know, treatment of women or something. So, you know, I thought that was a nice tongue-in-cheek way for, first off, Tim Schafer to acknowledge the controversy that's going on in games right now, but also just to sort of point out, like, it's very special that we have such incredible women in the industry, even despite all this crap going on. And, you know, obviously Roberta Williams' time was far before that, but
I mean,
even then, it was still an issue.
You know, this isn't Sierra Bowie today, but, I mean, you have to recognize that Roberta Williams was the one who really, you know, made the company into games. Like, Ken was just going to make a compiler or something. He was just making software, and she's like, let's make games. And they made games.
Yes, they did. You know, there was also some really touching stuff. Super popular rock band Imagine Dragons came out. They performed a really beautiful duet with Koji Kondo on some Zelda music. It was just, to me, it was a lot more special and a lot more about games as a craft than just about, like, pop culture and brodom than the old Spike VGAs were. I'm very excited about this event. I thought, you know, despite a couple of hiccups, that overall, I think it's very beneficial to the industry to have a legitimate celebration of the quality and, you know, just excitement of the games industry.
And, you know, like, they really put the spotlight on the developers. I mean, like, not that Reggie's really a developer, but, you know, like, Reggie was up there, like, you know, talking
about
stuff.
Reggie Fils-Aimé?
Yeah, I mean, girl, Reggie does not need to be introduced by his full name, I don't think.
We probably have listeners who don't know who Reggie is,
okay.
but continue.
The Reginator. And, you know, like, you know, just, actually, you know, and not that, I mean, I guess that happened to some degree at the Game Awards, the Video Game Awards of past, but, you know, really just highlighting, you know, the creative people behind this instead of just, like, doing Doritos!
Yeah, so let's talk about some of the news that came out of this event. You know, the event started with Reggie Fils-Aimé from Nintendo talking about Mario Maker, and we got a new trailer for Mario Maker that all revealed to us that we will, in addition to having original Super Mario Brothers and new Mario Brothers tool sets and graphic sets, there's also going to be Super Mario Brothers 3 and Super Mario World tool sets.
As if this isn't already a must-have, like, yeah.
Yeah, this went from something that I was excited, but not that excited for, to, oh man, I need this right now.
I mean, you were talking about making your own, I don't want to say ROM hack, but, you know, like, basically that of Mario World for years.
Yeah, yeah, and it's interesting to think, you know, I might now be able to do it with an officially supported tool set. So it's very exciting, just super exciting.
I'm curious to learn more because, you know, I'm wondering, can you basically create your entire, like, an entire game in it, or is it just, like, going to be levels and you play the level?
I think we're going to find that out sometime in the next few months.
Like, oh, here, this is 8 World that Spike Point made.
Yes.
Complete with an overworld map.
In other announcements, we also got the announcement of the next project coming out of Fulbright. You might be familiar with Fulbright's indie hit Gone Home. The new one is going to be called Tacoma, and it is a sci-fi game. All we really know is that, you know, there was a 1-minute-long teaser trailer that debuted at the Game Awards, but it looks very atmospheric, very exploration-based. Again, you know, it looks like a sci-fi Gone Home, focusing more on the exploration elements rather than combat elements you might see in most games with a setting like this. I'm very excited. I think this is probably going to be a really incredible experience.
Stoic Studio is working on the Banner Saga 2.
Excellent. We also got word that EA, through their partners program, is going to be publishing the next project from Joseph Fares.
What? Ferris.
Yes, that. This game is going to be developed by his new studio, Hazelight. You might be familiar with Joseph Fares from his previous game, Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons.
Yeah.
Which was a huge hit many, many people love. We don't know anything about a release window or target platforms, just that the game is coming.
310 has announced their new space-based game, Adrift. It will be coming to Oculus Rift, PS4, Xbox One, and Steam.
And let's just point out, Oculus Rift isn't a platform per se, so
it's going to have Oculus Rift support.
Yes.
And, you know, there was a little trailer of it. There was a spacesuited astronaut walking through and then almost ran out of oxygen, and it was very tense.
Yeah, it looked...
Captain Spike was yelling at the TV, like, what are you doing? You're running out of oxygen.
Yeah, no, I got super into this trailer. I think it looks really, really cool, and I can't wait to play it myself, so...
It'll be published by 505, so it's brought to you by 310 and 505.
It'll be released in summer of 2015. Please look forward to it. The next game from Facepunch Studios, whom you might be familiar with for Rust and Gary's Mod, is going to be a game called Before. We got a trailer for this. It's a 3D cel-shaded journey through lands before civilization. What that means in terms of actual gameplay, I can't really tell you, but I was looking at it, and it seemed to me to have, like, almost like a Civ element to it, of like that whole 4X, you know, explore and expand, etc. Either way, I'm really looking forward to it. I can't wait to play it, just because, again, I thought that the aesthetic was really striking, and if it is a Civilization-style game, I'm definitely here for it.
Yeah. You know, it might build upon the work they did with Rust, or he did. I don't know how big a studio it is. As we mentioned, the new King's Quest game is coming, and it is going to be brought to you by Activision, along with the Odd Gentleman taking helm for the development. This will be coming out for Xbox platforms, PlayStation platforms, and PC in fall of 2015.
Excellent. We also got word that the Japanese-made PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4 Godzilla game will be coming to North America in summer of 2015, courtesy of Bandai Namco. For those of you who are unfamiliar with this specific game, it doesn't play like a beat-em-up or a fighter. This is more about controlling Godzilla or a handful of other giant monsters and just destroying cities.
Yeah.
So sort of, you know, the meat and potatoes of the Godzilla experience. If you're into that, please look forward to it when it comes to PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4 in North America this summer. Otherwise, you're probably not going to be looking for this game. We also got the announcement that Dungeon Defenders 2 is going to be coming to PlayStation 4 in 2014, as well as the fact that this release is going to be exclusive in the console space to the PlayStation 4. The game also released that same day on Steam Early Access for those of you that want to get a head start on your dungeon defending experience.
Lovely.
And last, but most certainly not least, we also got a new trailer for Codename Steam.
And a release date!
At the end of which, the release date of March 13, 2015 was announced for North America. I'm really excited for this game. We talked about it here on the show before. We will definitely be talking about this one more as we get closer to that March 13th release date.
Yeah, that was a surprise, a pleasant surprise to see.
Yeah, it absolutely was.
And they're all talking about intelligent systems, and it's like, yeah, this is on an award show. They're talking about intelligent systems and the Fire Emblem success. So, I mean, that kind of right there gives you an idea of how different in culture its intent was. Whether or not it was successful at that is, you know, maybe your opinion.
So the day after the Game Awards, the Sony Experience started in Vegas. We've talked about that event a little bit here on the show, but what we weren't expecting at this show was for there to be so many announcements made. There was a keynote starting at the beginning of the Sony Experience, so that Saturday morning, and, you know, we tuned in and spent our Saturday morning watching that so that we could talk about it here for you. So there was some cool news regarding Street Fighter, two pieces of cool news. The first being that PlayStation 4 is getting a port of Ultra Street Fighter 4, which is, of course, the most recent release of the Street Fighter 4 franchise, which is going to, quote-unquote, debut exclusively on PlayStation 4. I assume that simply means that there won't be a version coming to Xbox One.
Yeah.
In bigger and somewhat more exciting news, however, we also got a gameplay trailer full reveal of Street Fighter V. This is going to be a PS4 and PC game exclusively, with crossplay between the PS4 and PC platforms.
Yeah, it was really cute. Yoshinori Ono was like, yes, you've never seen this before, right?
Yeah, he had made a joke because news of Street Fighter V had actually leaked the day before. Many of us thought that the Game Awards was going to have the Street Fighter V revealed, you know, due to the timing, but no, it turned out it was a PlayStation Experience reveal.
And Adam Boys, who's actually a really enjoyable presence on this presentation, he pulled out his phone, you know, pretended to call and be like, okay, NeoGAF doesn't have this trailer yet. So, I mean, it was very a tongue-in-cheek reveal.
Absolutely. We don't know a whole lot about the game yet, but this is, again, this is definitely one that we'll be talking about a lot in the next year. So
indeed,
please look forward to that.
San Diego Studio has announced Killstrain, which is a 5v2v5 game. You know, there wasn't really a lot shown. It's, you know, involving an outbreak, and there's mutations and infections that, you know, mostly it was like a logo. People were like, yeah!
Yeah.
Which they do at these Sony events. Yeah, logos!
Yeah. We also got an announcement of a PlayStation 4 release for the upcoming sequel to Killing Floor. This is Killing Floor 2. We don't yet have a release date specified, but presumably we'll be hearing a lot more about this in the coming months.
Supergiant Games is bringing Bastion to PS4 and Vita.
You know what else is coming to PS4 and Vita? Yacht Club Games' Game of the Year contender, Shovel Knight.
With...
Something really cool about this is that the PlayStation 4 and PlayStation Vita will have a new boss fight in the form of God of War's Kratos.
Yes!
I swear, Sony just lets them add Kratos to anything.
Right.
In what I would give as the biggest surprise news of the week, a week which I might add had quite a bit of noteworthy news, Sony is working with Sega to bring Yakuza 5 to the US for PlayStation 3.
Yeah.
This is going to be a PSN release, no retail release. And my understanding is that Sony is doing a lot of the heavy lifting on bringing this localization to North America. So if you're one of those people who's been very upset about the lack of Yakuza in North America, this is your time to let your voice be heard, to let Sega and Sony know that we want this kind of content, and to, you know, really prove to them that this can be a profitable series for them.
Yeah, you can get Yakuza 4 and Yakuza Dead Souls now for PSN, and that's one way to show Sony and Sega.
My understanding is that those are being sold on the PSN shop for $19.99. If you're looking to get into the Yakuza series, I would say skip Dead Souls, but go for 4.
Nice. Banner Saga, Resident Evil Revelations 2, Octodad, Deadliest Catch, Super Time Force Ultra, and Towerfall Ascension are making their way to Vita. But what is probably the biggest news is that Suikoden 1 and 2 are now available for the PSN.
Yeah, they're available on PSN for both Vita and PlayStation 3. I have already done my part and gone and downloaded Suikoden 2. Again, if you're a fan of classic JRPG series, you should have already played these games, but if you haven't, you now have the ability to rectify that.
I mean, was this back in the day when JRPGs still cost like $80?
I mean, Suikoden 1 in particular was an early PS1 game, so it was what, like $39.99?
Okay, see, like, I was a little late to the PlayStation Nation, so... Yeah,
right.
I missed out on speaking in, so I'm definitely excited to finally dive in.
We also got news that Double Fine is doing another HD remaster of one of their classic games. This time, we're going to be looking at Day of the Tentacle. And something that's really exciting to me about this is, in addition to just the fact that we are getting a new version of Day of the Tentacle, is that it's going to be coming to the PS4 and the Vita, along with Broken Age.
Yeah.
We don't know too much yet about release dates for Day of the Tentacle, but Broken Age will be launching on the same day as Act 2 of the PC release of Broken Age. So please look forward to that.
Also from San Diego Studios, MLB The Show 2015 is going to be coming on March 31st.
And this game is just going to be called MLB The Show 15.
Sorry, 15.
It's all good. And we probably won't be talking about it too much more here on the show, except for me to talk about playing it.
Well, I mean, then there's also the fact that the cover is like,
Puig.
Dodgers.
Yeah, it's Puig. Gross.
But the trailer did feature them playing against the Giants, so...
Santa Monica Studio shared several trailers for upcoming games, including Fat Princess Adventures, which one of the Koopa Club boys had tweeted, Fat Shame Princess Adventures, which I thought was appropriate.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of people were not happy with more Fat Princess.
We also have the new title from Keita Takahashi-san. This is called Watam. We don't know really anything about Watam yet, other than the fact that it had a super adorable trailer. And more interestingly, we had the reveal of a game called What Remains of Edith Finch, which is apparently a collection of short stories involving a cursed family. I am definitely super excited for two of these three games.
Yeah. Can we also talk about that Takahashi-san had a plastic fork in his hands the entire time? I guess that's just what he do, though, huh?
Pretty much.
Okay, can I please take this news? Because this is, like,
sure.
The biggest news that GameBuie has ever reported on. We are very, very excited to report to you that Final Fantasy VII is coming to the PS4. That's right. A port of the PC version is on its way to PS4 in spring of 2015. We're hearing about a $16.99 price tag, I believe, for the PlayStation Classic. Presumably with this Man R6 translation.
Yeah,
did they fix that for the PC?
I haven't put enough time into the PC version to say, but I hope not. This guy R6.
It's because of this effing pizza that everyone has to suffer. The pizza is Midgar.
Yeah, I know, I've played it. We also got the announcement of the new game from David Jaffe's new studio, Bartlett Jones Supernatural Detective Agency.
That's
the name of the studio, not the name of the game. The game is called Drawn to Death. Drawn to Death is a PS4 exclusive multiplayer arena shooter. It's specifically based on sort of the idea of being like, oh, this is a high school student, like a metalhead high school student's like notebook that he's drawn all these sketches in, and now the sketches are fighting. It had art style very reminiscent of like Platinum Games' Mad World,
mm-hmm.
paired with gameplay of like Quake meets Capcom's Spawn in the Demon's Hand. I am super excited for the way this game looks. You know, I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of David Jaffe, but I do think he generally has some really gameplay-first ideas
mm-hmm.
that, you know, oftentimes feel really fresh. Say what you will about the God of War series, but the first God of War game in its time was actually quite the experience.
Yeah.
So, I'm really excited to see what he's gonna do here. I have to admit, I love the whole, like, 14-year-old boy notebook. Like,
it's a really clever conceit. Yeah.
And just, I'm super into it. I am very excited for this game, and this is definitely one you're gonna be hearing more about here on the show.
Yeah. We have some more indie games on their way to the PS4, you know, really becoming kind of an indie haven. Over the PS4. That includes Enter the Gungeon, Orcs Must Die Unchained, Skytorn, Darkest Dungeon, and The Forest.
Excellent. And those are all meant to release before the end of 2015.
Yeah, and, you know, most of them, if not all of them, are, you know, available on PC. Some of them, I think, are still yet to be released, but, you know, some are on Early Access, etc.
Excellent, excellent.
Actually, it looks like most of them are yet to come out. I'm not familiar with the release of all of these.
We also have word here that in the upcoming release of Super Time Force Ultra for PlayStation 4 and PlayStation Vita, the president of Sony Computer Entertainment Worldwide Studios, Shuhei Yoshida-san, will be a playable character.
Right.
He will wield his smartphone as a weapon, which will be able to shoot out emoticons as well as laser beam Twitter messages. The gameplay trailer they showed of this was hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot wait for this version of the game to release. I'm a huge fan of Super Time Force, as, you know, we've talked about here on the show. And definitely, if you haven't checked this game out yet, it looks like the perfect opportunity is coming for you.
Yeah. Are they just going by Cappy now instead of Capybara?
You know, I have seen, like, a lot of their branding has changed from Capybara to just Cappy. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I was just looking at their YouTube channel. That's called Cappy Games now.
Their logo is still an adorable capybara.
Yeah, I wonder if they had a legal issue.
Last, but certainly not least, we also got a release date for the PlayStation 4 and PlayStation Vita release of Grim Fandango Remastered.
Yeah.
This is going to be coming out on January 27th.
And, I mean, it looks really, really nice and polished. The lighting looked great. And I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited for this. All right, well, that about wraps it up for the PlayStation Experience keynote.
PlayStation Nation!
and various announcements that were made throughout the show. I believe we've got a little bit of sad news, though, with our one...
Doom and
Takashi Sensui, who is the head of Xbox Japan, had resigned from his role as the head of Xbox Japan, according to Famitsu, by way of Kotaku. Anyway, Sensui-san has been the head of Xbox Japan, since 2006, so, you know, through the lifespan of the Xbox 360, which, of course, was not a big seller in Japan. He will still be working with Xbox Japan, and, he will support Xbox Japan by being the general manager for the interactive entertainment business, I guess that is the title, for Microsoft's U.S. headquarters. And instead of one person taking Sensui-san's place, it'll be a collaborative effort between Yoshinami Takahashi, who is the general manager of Consumer and Partner Group, and Nobuyoshi Yokoi, who is the boss of the Consumer and Partner Group retail business. And apparently there's a reorganization effort within Xbox Japan, which this comes in light of the news that the first week of September, the Xbox One only pushed 23,500 CPU.
Yeah.
The first week of its September debut. And compared to, the PS4 and Wii U both doing 300,000 or more during their launch period.
Yeah, so that's really sad. I'm just glad that he was sort of reallocated rather than being let go entirely. So either way, really sorry to hear that. And hopefully fortunes can turn around for Xbox One in Japan. I mean,
yeah,
Lord knows I'm not necessarily expecting it, but it would be nice.
Well, I mean, you know, Xbox has never been a popular brand over there.
No, it really hasn't.
And I mean, I think the way to really... possibly crack the market would be if they released a handheld. Because, I mean, you know how Japan loves handheld gaming.
I appreciate that as an idea, but it's not like Windows Phone is popular over there.
Ah!
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't shade, though. It's just, I don't know that put it on a portable is really going to help them with their branding issue.
Put it on a portable. But yes, we are glad that he seems to have landed on his feet. And we still think the Xbox One is a good console.
All right, well, with all of that having been said, it is time for us to dig into the meat and potatoes of why we're here this week. So, this week, we are talking about censorship in games. And, you know, it's funny because we had initially, we've been planning on talking about this for episode 69 for a long time now, because we're 5-year-olds.
Yeah.
But there was a big news story in the games industry this week that really made this sort of a timely point of discussion. The award-winning Border Agent simulator Papers, Please was rejected for release on the iOS store by Apple until Lucas Pope, the game's creator, would remove all nudity from the game. We talked here a little bit about how crazy this game is and how interesting and special this game is, Papers, Please. You play as a border agent, you have to look over people's papers, you have to look at, you know, the x-ray of the naked character, and to determine that all of their credentials are accurate. So, that's actually like a game mechanic, it's not like nudity for laughs or anything, like, no, it's a mechanic, and playing this game is a really trippy experience, because it's just... At least to me, it's so unpleasant to be asked to judge people by sort of these kinds of data. And you know, again, that's built into the game by design.
Right, right.
Something that's been really cool about the original PC release of this game, though, is that you can toggle the nudity off if you're that uncomfortable with it. So I guess Apple basically was like, well, you can't release it with the nudity toggle. There can be no nudity in your game. Lucas Pope, the game's creator, went to the game's media and, you know, complained basically, like, this is a game that is super well-regarded. Most people who think critically about games view this as, like, a culturally important game experience. So, you know, it's sort of a slap in the face to the games as art movement to be told by Apple that this is pornography. And, you know, this story does have a happy ending. Apple has let Mr. Pope know that his game is welcome on the App Store, even with nudity. The game has to default to nudity off, but it is okay to leave the toggle in and for people to play with that game mechanic. Just during their initial review, I guess, they saw that there was a nudity toggle and decided that shouldn't be a toggle. But on further inspection, they appreciate the value of the game and are comfortable having it on their storefront. So that's a good thing. The sort of larger issue that came up to a lot of people here is, you know, is it necessarily a good thing that Apple has the power to be gatekeeper over what games can be? And something that's really interesting is that, you know, Slackick and I, we've been sort of reading up on this topic for a little while, and you can sort of see that, historically speaking, there have been companies sort of gatekeeping certain kinds of content. Whether that is better or worse, I certainly couldn't say. But you look at things like the kerfuffle over Binding of Isaac not coming to Nintendo platforms due to Nintendo being uncomfortable with the religious and primarily religious content, but also, you know, sort of, how do I say, violent and or sexual imagery. So it's, you know, it's just a whole discussion worth having, and I thought that this was a good starting point to give you context for why this is still an issue. Because I know a lot of people feel like we're beyond games censorship now. Grand Theft Auto V can have all kinds of cursing and violence and sex. But no, this is still a big issue, and we want to take a little bit of a look at it, both historically, and to sort of look at some really notable times that games have been censored in localization. Slaggy, what do you have to say?
You know, it's a really interesting topic to look at, I think, because, you know, I think the first place a lot of people take it is that, oh, you know, games shouldn't be censored, art shouldn't be censored, but, you know, there are different motivations, different reasons. It's not necessarily just to be, you know,
edgy.
No, I meant the censorship. There's different reasons that, you know, censorship may happen.
It's not necessarily just to be a prude.
Yes, thank you. That's exactly what I was trying to say. And, you know, kind of something we'll briefly touch on is that, you know, so many people tend to think of Nintendo as the censorship kings, so to speak. And, I mean, there's really a big history before and after that, you know, NES seal of quality kind of period where, you would hear about just all of these edits that Nintendo of America forced developers to make and such, so.
Well, you know, something that needs to be noted on that is, again, Nintendo did used to be viewed as sort of like the censorship king, but that was almost an intentional choice on Nintendo's part in North America. You know, you may think back to, you know, the early to mid 80s where, you know, before the 83 industry crash, we saw games like Beat 'em and Eat 'em.
Custer's Revenge
is certainly a big one. You know, there was the whole studio Mystique that was just known for just making sexually explicit adult games for Atari 2600 that were being sold on store shelves right next to Pac-Man and E.T. and stuff. So, you know, Nintendo, when they brought the Famicom to the United States as the Nintendo Entertainment System, they really were specifically trying to sell it as a family-friendly device. And in a lot of ways, that situation put them in a position where they almost had to sort of upkeep this reputation or suffer, you know, potentially another industry crash. And my understanding is that you've done a lot of research on the specific content guidelines of that stuff. And
yes, would you like me to briefly read off the
let's do that.
10 points that they kind of their 10 commandments, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of censorship. So they said that, you know, Nintendo will not approve games for the NES, Game Boy, or Super NES systems, such as audiovisual work passaging and instruction manuals, which 1. Include sexually suggestive or explicit content, including rape and or nudity. 2. Contain language or depiction which specifically denigrates members of either sex. 3. Depicts random, gratuitous, and or excessive violence. 4. Depict graphic illustration of death. 5. Depict domestic violence and or abuse. 6. Depict excessive force in a sports game beyond what is inherent in actual contact sports. 7. Reflect ethnic, religious, nationalistic, or sexual stereotypes of language. This includes symbols that are related to any type of racial, religious, nationalistic, or ethnic group, such as crosses, pentagram, god, gods, Roman mythological gods are acceptable, Satan, hell, Buddha. 8. Use profanity or obscenity in any form or incorporate language or gestures that could be offensive by prevailing public standards and tastes. 9. Incorporate or encourage the use of illegal drugs, smoking materials, and or alcohol. Nintendo does not allow a beer or cigarette ad to be placed on an arena, stadium, or playing field wall or fence board game. 10 includes subliminal political messages or overt political statement. And, you know, some of those, you know, might be, like, a little bit silly. But, you know, thinking about the things, like, you know, especially the things that could be really triggering, you know, I think a lot of it was within reason.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I know it's not necessarily a popular opinion, but I understand why Nintendo did this, and I even understand the concept of, like, quote-unquote, good taste that they were basically dictating there. You know, and a lot of people talk about, you know, family values as a negative context for the way that that sort of speaks against alternative lifestyles, quote-unquote. But I don't really see this as family values per se, because this really to me seems more like follow standards of good taste through some of the inclusions here of, you know, equal depiction of the sexes and what have you. I actually feel like this is as forward thinking as a censorship scheme from the 80s can be. But again, you know, they had commercial concerns that were really important in order to get the games industry back to a healthy place. So, you know, we look at games censorship historically as a Nintendo thing and LOL Kitty family friendly, but it's important to recognize within its proper context that Nintendo very specifically was trying to rehabilitate the entire games industry, and this was an important part in that. And, you know, I know this certainly wouldn't have been a cool opinion to have when I was in school, but I don't think there's necessarily no correlation to the fact that once video games did get brought into the media for, you know, violence in games issues, that we were mostly talking about games in that period, you know, the whole Joe Lieberman, Jack Thompson, you know, that whole era in the early 90s, we're largely talking about the games that really spurred the second wave of games censorship. You know, we're largely looking at games that Nintendo said this is wouldn't fly for us. Stuff like Night Trap, stuff like Mortal Kombat, like both specifically games that Nintendo would not let on their platform as designed, that ultimately blew up in the game industry's face and brought the game industry under very close scrutiny by, you know, legislation.
Right. You know, kind of touching on Nintendo for a minute, for most of us, you know, it was probably hardly noticeable, especially if you weren't familiar with the original Japanese versions. Like, one of the most popular examples is that in DuckTales for NES by Capcom, the tombstones in the Transylvania stage were changed to have, you know, because crosses, any type of crosses depiction, even on a hospital, interestingly, were, you know, considered not okay. Earthbound had that change, but... for example, the tombstones in Transylvania and DuckTales were changed to say RIP, which, you know, makes sense. I mean, it doesn't really affect, like, I never even put any thought into it.
And, you know, I wasn't gonna necessarily get into the specific, you know, examples right this second, but, you know, some other instances were, you know, the game Narc having all of its drug references removed for the NES release, which is, like, literally the point of the game Narc. You know, in Ice Climber, all of the seals, in the Japanese version, the enemies are seals that you have to club with your hammer. For the international versions, they were changed to yetis, because obviously seal clubbing. In Mother, you know, Earthbound Zero, all of the references to blood or tobacco or religion or, you know, crosses, which I guess falls under religion, but separate category also because crosses are also used in medicine, as Slagkick pointed out. These were all removed by Nintendo in the prototype of Earthbound Zero. And something most interesting and most game buoy is that Bionic Commando, one of my favorite grappler platformers of all time, in Japan, the boss was just the resurrected Adolf Hitler. And for North America, he was renamed Master D. And the Nazis, whom in Japan, you know, straight up, you fought Nazis, there were swastikas in it. They were changed for the North American release into the, like, German eagle. But somewhat interestingly, the super graphic death scene of where Hitler's head explodes in a mess of blood was left intact. But, you know, again, if you weren't looking for these changes, if you didn't know that in Narc you're supposed to be shooting someone who is throwing dumpsters at you because he's on PCP, I guess you wouldn't know these things. I certainly, before researching for this episode, wasn't aware that Ice Climber had you clubbing seals.
Right.
So, I mean, I understand why, again, Nintendo, given their position, really felt like it was important to remove this stuff from games. I don't necessarily disagree with it due to my feelings on keeping the integrity of art, but I do see how, given that they were trying to fix an industry that had torn itself apart, I get why they thought this was a good idea.
Yeah.
I think it's funny that it sort of set a standard and expectation for content to be censored within this medium. I'm sorry, you were saying?
And I'm just saying, like, in a lot of cases, it didn't really impact the game. I mean, there were cases, like you said, NARC, where that was the entire point. But, like, does it really matter if you went to a cafe or a pub in Final Fantasy VI, III?
No, not at all. There was
one funny story that I was reading about, which was Final Fantasy Legend 2, which that was one of the Saga games, right?
Yes.
It would have been Saga 2. And apparently there was a gang that was smuggling opium, but in the Final Fantasy Legend 2 release, which is what it was called, you know, over here, it was banana smuggling.
Banana smuggling. That has some interesting gay implications.
And then, there was also things like Soda Popinski from Punch-Out was originally Vodka Drunkinski.
Rude.
Yeah, which is a little, culturally said. And then, of course, probably the most famous one that if you grew up around the time Captain Spike and I did, would be Mortal Kombat not having blood in the SNES version.
To the point, and you were telling me this story, Saggy, and this was also true from my experience of, you know, if you were going to play Mortal Kombat with your mates would almost inevitably ask, like, wait, are we talking about the Genesis version or the Super Nintendo version? Like, kids didn't want to hang out if you only had the Super Nintendo version.
Yeah, and I mean, kind of like, tying into, like, the culture, we think of, like, you know, and I think maybe in the past couple years, people have started to really appreciate Nintendo on its artistic merit, but, I mean, we really, even with the Wii especially, you know, marketed to families, oh, Nintendo's for kids, and I mean, that attitude was around since the 90s because of, I would say largely because of the censorship and, you know, things like that, to the point where I was like, oh my god, this friend has an SNES.
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, it's funny because all of these issues that we're talking about, it all sort of coalesced ultimately in something that, you know, I'm actually personally a big fan of, and I'm talking about the ESRB.
Or PEGI in Europe.
Or PEGI in Europe, yes. You know, it's a theoretically independent from the games industry governing board. They take on games, they rate them. Because if you think about it, if you really think back to the mid-90s, for a second, it really looked like the games industry was in trouble again. Mm-hmm. Nintendo had worked real hard to rehabilitate the industry, and it looked for a while there, you know, there were hearings where Howard Lincoln from Nintendo and Bill White from Sega had to come in and basically defend video games to the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, like you said, Jack Thompson being most famous for anti-video games, but he was also the one against rap music. Wasn't he the one who was, like, put to Live Crew on trial? Oh, no, that was Bob Dole's wife, wasn't it? I don't know.
Anyway,
interestingly, Sega was one of the first to, they voluntarily had their games rate. They had their own games rating system.
Well, when they really went for the whole, we're the anti-Nintendo shtick, they did themselves come up with a rating system for their games. And, you know, that was cool in that it did give people an idea of the content of the games. But it was almost like a smokescreen to the real issue because these weren't ratings that were being upheld in any way. There was definitely no real, like, knowledge of what these ratings meant to the general consumer. Stores weren't given information on, like, what ratings shouldn't be sold to what age groups. It always felt like lip service to me, even when I was a kid watching all this happen. At hearings with the government, Howard Lincoln sort of came out against Sega, saying a title like Night Trap has no place in our society. And, you know, Sega was very much like, no, we have a rating system, so we can do whatever, because people are going to buy the games that are appropriate for them. And, you know, unfortunately, it's cute to think, but in reality, that's not how these things typically work. And don't get me wrong, I love Night Trap. But I do get how Nintendo's stance was basically, you know, y'all are taking us back to the days of Custer's Revenge. This isn't a good thing. So I think that we're really lucky that games got out of that situation unscathed. We certainly wouldn't be here today if it hadn't. And, you know, when in April of 1994, when Acclaim, Electronic Arts, Nintendo, and Sega got together and formed, you know, the ESRB, along with other representatives from other companies and vendors, certain vendors were involved, even though the entire rating system was meant to be vendor neutral. You know, ultimately, I am a big fan of the ESRB. I may occasionally buy my nephews games that aren't within their appropriate age group per the ESRB, but I think having descriptors on the front of every box is a really good idea, and I really do think that it has helped get us away from a world where every game is super heavily censored. Because again, a lot of JRPGs, a lot of stuff rooted in any kind of alternative lifestyle, quote-unquote, in those early days would definitely get censored, and we are moving now to, you know, finally some 20 years since the ESRB was formed, we are now getting to a point where we see a lot less censorship in games, although this does still happen.
Right. And, you know, even to the point where, like, look at Rated M for Mature games being released on Nintendo consoles.
Yeah, absolutely. Heck, we just had a major one a month and a half ago in Bayonetta 2. Heck, that was published by Nintendo themselves.
Yeah, so, I mean, definitely the times, they are a-changing.
There's, you know, violence, blood, sex, religion, it's all in that game.
Uh-huh.
Don't fuck with the witch.
Right?
So, you know, it's... I just really wanted to look at sort of that historical perspective before we talked too much about specific incidences of censorship. Slaggy, I know you had some censorship, like, specific things you wanted to talk about, so why don't you hit me with one?
You know, one of my favorite instances of censorship that, people might not even realize is, unless you've probably heard us talk about it on the show before, is Jammer Lammy, which,
if you could play in hell, you've come far.
Right. The Teriyaki Yoko stage, originally had Lammy slipping on a banana peel and dying. And, she's playing in hell, and she has to escape from hell. And they changed that to a tropical island.
Which is why the lyric in the US version is, if you could play on an island, you come far.
Right?
So yeah, I, absolutely love that change. Like, I thought that was a good way to do it. And you know, Parappa 2 had a similar change. I can't really get the rhythm correct or the meter correct to do a Parappa rap, but they changed the lyrics to, tastes better than wine in the Japanese release to, you better get in line in the North American release.
Yeah. And we mentioned Earthbound. There are a couple, instances of Earthbound that are interesting. Apparently to the point where certain sound effects were replaced, because I guess there was one character who, you heard like a whipping sound, and then after that he said, oh, my butt hurts, to imply that, you know, he'd been beaten. And they changed it to, like, the sound effect for the yelling sound. That was the one where the Red Cross was taken off of the hospitals. There's apparently a phrase, die and go to hell, which was replaced with, I'll smash your guts out. And something that's interesting is that the Wii U Virtual Console version is identical, but it's been re-rated as T for teen instead of being...
Oh, interesting.
Kids through adults, K to A, which is now E for everyone.
Yeah.
On the original SNES release.
And, you know, something that in this whole conversation we're sort of skirting around is, in other territories, and we've talked about this a little bit in other episodes, but in other territories, you know, most of the United States' censorship is about alcohol or religion or sex. These days in particular, it is very, very rarely about violence. But in other territories, Australia and Germany in particular, I know, are a lot trickier. Although also Japan, sometimes. You often will see violent acts or, like, super gory imagery censored. A really easy-to-remember instance for me would be the Wii release of No More Heroes. One of the bosses in the cinema, after you fought them, Travis cuts off his hands, which become, like, are still holding onto a sword that gets stuck in the ceiling of a game, and as the last cinema is playing of that confrontation, like, blood is raining down from his hand stumps on you. And all of the blood and, like, dismembered hands were removed in the, I believe it was Australian and German regions for that. And somewhat similarly, in Japan, the Resident Evil games have pretty consistently had all on-screen depictions of decapitation removed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, you know, obviously we are both Americans, so our censorship focus tends to be on sexual themes and religious themes. Very little about violence, because LOL America.
Right.
A good example of where this is sort of exemplified would probably be the Xenosaga series. And it's actually funny the way that that series changes as it goes. In the first game, all of the sexual themes were toned down pretty dramatically for the North American release. But the vast majority of the violence was left intact. And that actually stayed in Xenosaga Episode 2, aside from a scene where one character shoots his own head off. And that was actually censored pretty heavily, then turned into more of like a supernatural, like, energy ball.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, absolutely. And episode 3 of Xenosaga, most interestingly, all of the violence was left in, but all of the blood was removed, which led to some really interesting scenes, such as when Cosmos was asking another character why they were covered in blood, and they were not covered in blood at all.
Oh. You know, and also in the Final Fantasy games, holy spells were changed, I think, in 4/2, it was white. I think it was called Pearl in 6/3. Which, you know, it's kind of minor, but...
When I first played Final Fantasy VII, which was the first Final Fantasy released in North America that didn't have those edits, I was like, what the fuck is holy?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, one of the silliest things I came across when I was researching is when I was, you know, when I was reading up on the Nintendo rules and the subliminal political messages, and like, you know, I was like, what games would have that? But the example that I came across was Socks the Cat Rocks the Hill, because it was, you know, starring Socks the Cat, who was the Clinton family's cat. He was trying to, you know, take down, you know, corrupt politicians and stuff, and they were caricatures of Republicans like, you know, Nixon, and to the point where Nintendo Power was like, oh, that's kind of controversial, and, you know, that game ultimately was not released, and it perhaps that had a part in it, but that was funny, because I was like, what game? And it's, of course, Socks the Cat Rocks the Hill. Right?
You know, I want to talk about interesting piece of censorship that actually I saw some threads on various message boards just this week. Something that I've been familiar with. I think I mentioned it when we did our Game Boy Micro on the Kingdom Hearts series. But in the North American release of Kingdom Hearts 2, actually, you had some censorship done. The character of Organization 13 that carries a gun, in the North American release, it was changed to like a crossbow device. And rather than there's a really cool point of view sequence where you're looking at your character through his like scope, and that scope is changed to being like a super futuristic, like silly aiming mechanism, which while functionally the same, isn't just straight up like a gun scope. There was also a really more notable change in that in Kingdom Hearts 2 in the Pirates of the Caribbean level, originally in the Japanese release, when you cast fire spells on the zombies of the Black Pearl or whatever, you know, the skeletons and various zombie enemies, if you cast fire on them, they would actually catch on fire and be shambling around on fire while taking continued damage. And in the North American release, while they do take continued persistent damage, there is no flame effect on them any different than any other fire spell you would use on any other character in the game. There was also a cinema that was edited so that when Barbossa gets stabbed in the back with a sword by Captain Jack, I believe it was Captain Jack that stabbed him in the back, and he's like at first a skeleton, and then he stumbles into the moonlight, and he's a human. That knife was actually, or the sword was actually supposed to be visible poking out of the front of his chest in the Japanese release, but for the North American release, they edited that out as well.
Oh, wow.
So they made it like a shorter dagger that's not sticking out of his front.
So
that was a really interesting topic of censorship that came up that, you know, a lot of people thought the recent release of Kingdom Hearts 2.5 HD Remix would remedy that and release the quote-unquote uncensored version in North America for the first time. But no, that is not the case. They remastered those graphics and still used the same changes for the North American audience.
Interesting. I wonder if that's more because of a Disney game than it is a Square Enix thing.
That seems very likely to me. But, you know, it's also interesting within the larger context we were discussing, you know, whether it's a good idea for the industry to have someone gatekeeping this kind of content. But, you know, it's not always platform holders. Sometimes it's, you know, like you said, licensors who say, this is objectionable in this region.
Right. And, I mean, Disney makes sense that they wouldn't want it to be. Although, I mean, the fact that they were okay with it in Japan, maybe, you know, that's what's kind of interesting to me.
Well, you know, something else that's interesting to me, and this is an instance where a very similar change was made, and this one was actually made for North America. I want to talk about Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe. You may recall both the Joker and Deathstroke had very similar fatalities where they would walk up to a character and ultimately shoot them in the head. Joker's had a super in-character, like, gun that had the word bang come out of it, and then he, like, giggles, and the opponent thinks he's safe, and then he pulls out a real gun and shoots him in the head.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Deathstroke's is played a little less silly, a little straighter. But in both cases, and it's funny because a lot of people in North America thought it actually made the fatalities more impactful, the shot is sort of happens off screen where you see the gun and you see the Joker or Deathstroke, but the character that's getting shot is like the screen pans off of them before the shot triggers. And so it's like an implied act of violence. In the United Kingdom release of the game, it actually, like, the camera does not pan, and you see the shot, and you see the character get shot and fall to the ground, like, after getting shot in the head.
Oh, wow.
And it's funny, because to me, the way the shot pans and zooms in the North American release, it actually makes the violence implied, and I actually felt like the implied violence seems harsher than the actual violence you see. So it's interesting to me how I feel like NetherRealm, I think they might have just been like WB Studios or something at the time, I don't know. It's interesting that they took this limitation put on them, and to me ended up making a more interesting fatality out of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's always stuff like in Final Fight for the North American release, of course, the game's first two bosses, Damned and Sodom, were renamed to Thrasher and Katana. And in fact, Sodom, as Katana, was resurrected in the SNES version of Street Fighter Alpha 2. You know, we also in that game had characters who were transgender, who were just turned into...
Poison.
Yeah, Poison was one, and Roxy was the other. Turned into, you know, male enemies. You know, when you would pick up, like, a jug of beer, and the little text where you picked it up would be like, root beer! And it's like, no, that is obviously not root beer. Come on now. So it's just really funny. You had a... You know, that infamous mini stage, the bonus stage where you're beating up Homeboy's car.
Of course.
He came out and goes, "Oh, my car!" In the original, in the Japanese, of course, he comes out and says, "Oh, my God!"
I like "Oh, my car" better.
Yeah, I actually...
Oh, my car.
I do, too, if I'm being honest.
I'm gonna start saying OMC. But, oh, my car.
So, you know, these are obviously mostly censorship changes that we've discussed here, sort of from the older days of gaming. But, you know, still, like we said, Kingdom Hearts, Mortal Kombat versus DCU, even Xenosaga, these are games that are less than 10 years old that still have been censored. So, you know, I think it's really interesting to think about sort of how these publishers decide what games have, you know, content that is inappropriate for the audience they're marketing to. And I find even more interesting, like I brought up in Kingdom Hearts 2 and Mortal Kombat DC Universe, I'm very interested in thinking about how designers can work around those issues to still keep the action as they intended it. So, I mean, I guess this really all sort of coalesces and comes together back toward that point that we started on. Do we think it's a good thing to have someone gatekeeping this content on the platform level? And that, to me, is a very dangerous idea. You know, we see Steam has a marketplace, and they do gatekeep certain kinds of content. Like, that's why a lot of times you'll see ecchi games get through, games where there is a little bit of sexually suggested material, but not, like, explicit.
Mm-hmm.
And then hentai games just don't make it over. Like, H games are not welcome on Steam.
Right.
So, you know, this to me is sort of a concern. I'm certainly not terribly interested in playing Custer's Revenge 2015.
That's not a thing, is it?
No, oh gosh, no. I just meant as an example. That's Custer's Revenge 2015 is not a thing. I just meant as an example, even though I'm not interested in that kind of content, I'm not comfortable in saying that kind of content can't be sold. We no longer live in a world where Nintendo is revitalizing an entire industry. I think censorship was a thing that really did make business sense in the 80s for Nintendo to do. But I think now I'm really curious to see games start taking on more adult themes and dealing with them
right.
respectfully and really digging into the meat and potatoes of the real human experience. And, you know, you often see... This is so funny. This is so narratological of me. But, you know, you often see in movies and books dealing with highly sexual themes, and typically when they handle that material respectfully, it's very impacting to
mm-hmm.
people in taking that and thinking about it. And I'm worried that we're not there with games yet in a big way, because the game's audience isn't being taught how to savor those kinds of experiences
right.
because that kind of content is gatewayed. It's being held off from us. So, and you know, some games that sort of touch on these issues, Beyond Two Souls is one that comes to mind. I thought there were some interesting things going on there, but, certainly stuff like Catherine, which I almost called Vincent. I'm like, wrong protagonist name. You know, so we are still getting some of that content. Certainly the Persona series sometimes has bits of this. Certainly not as much as I would like, but maybe Persona 5 will remedy that. So I'm very interested in seeing
right.
the way that games tackle these kinds of materials evolve, and I'm not sure how that's going to happen with all the game's marketplace currently being as trolled as it is.
Right, and I mean, you exactly kind of hit what I wanted to say, is I really think that it should be up to, and the responsibility of developers to, you know, think about the purpose of, like, if you're going to include violence in your game, is, you know, like, I don't know, like, I want to say, and even, like, maybe sometimes there is a time and a place for gratuitous, silly, nonsense violence. I think of something like No More Heroes, but, you know, then also things like Popo and Yo.
Well, half the joke of No More Heroes is that its violence is gratuitous and without value.
Right, right. But, you know, then you look at something like Popo and Yo, which is an interesting piece to look at because, you know, it deals with alcoholism and, you know, child abuse. And, you kind of look back at Earthbound, which was censored because of spanking. You know,
yeah.
So really, like, coming a long way. And like I said, there's definitely a value in, you know, these sorts of stories being told. But, you know, like I said, so I think it's really, and, you know, we're really, I think, seeing that being challenged a lot. There are certain contingents of, the gaming community right now, you know, looking for broader representation of, you know, more diverse characters, more diverse types of stories, you know, certain developers being targeted because they're trying to tell stories in a different way and challenge what a game might be. And, you know, that's very threatening, and, you know, the whole death of gaming thing. But, you know, I think it's definitely, like, there are ways for these issues to be dealt with in gaming that have value. Like I said, Popo and Yo is, like, the first example that comes to mind where, under the old regime of things, you know, child abuse and alcoholism, like, there's no way that would have flown. But, I mean, it was really, you know...
That was an important game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure for a lot of people who, you know, suffered and, you know, dealt with, alcoholism in their family, that was probably a really powerful way to, you know, cope. Or, you know, I would hope that, you know, some people were able to find some comfort and, you know.
Well, and that's actually, that was a perfect example of the kind of game that I meant. Especially since, as we've talked here, that's a kind of game that couldn't have existed in earlier generations due to its content. But I think it's immensely important. I think it's really valuable that game exists. Gone Home is another one that wouldn't have been able to exist.
Mm-hmm.
But I think these games have tremendous value, and right now there's just not a lot of space to take some of these more mature themes to that level and take them further, and I think that's a shame for games as an art form.
Yeah, so, you know, hopefully...
It was funny, you know, when I started talking about, with Slykick, about my sort of shtick for this episode, I think he thought I was coming off as, like, pro-censorship because I was pro-Nintendo's censorship in the 80s. But I just want to be perfectly clear here. In the current age, I am definitely not for censorship of games. I don't think there's a need for that anymore. I think the market has evolved enough that we now have channels controlled enough. I've seen retailers card people for adult games. Heck, I got carded when I bought the first Bayonetta. So, you know, I feel like we're at a point now where the ESRB is doing what it was designed to do, and so there should be freedom from developers to tell stories that fit into that adults-only space, mm-hmm. that tackle mature themes and topics, and, you know, really go all the way in doing things with that in the game's space.
Yeah, and like I said, I think it really should be the responsibility of the developer to, you know, make their content meaningful. And whether,
absolutely.
You know, whether that's something like Papa One Yo that, you know, specifically it has a purpose for, you know, including child abuse, you know, but it was something that was like, oh, we're just going to show child abuse because we're trying to be edgy. Like, you know, that's not cool, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, you know, I don't really have a lot more to say about this. This is actually an opinion-heavy conversation we had here. Do you have anything more to say?
No. I think that we've pretty much wrapped it up.
All right. Well, I want to reach out to our listeners at this point. I want to give you a Game Buoy Extra hashtag here. Tweet, comment on our Facebook, email us over at gamebuoy@mailbuoy.org.
Excuse me. Don't you mean mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org?
Did I have that switched?
Yes, you said gamebuoy@mailbuoy.org.
No, I'm sorry. mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Don't give little mailbuoy don't inflate little mailbuoy's ego now.
So, you know, I would really be interested in hearing what are some notable instances of games censorship that come to mind for you.
Right.
And for our international listeners, I'm really super interested in hearing about some region-specific cases of censorship that you're familiar with that we have never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly, I had thought when I proposed doing this episode for episode 69 months ago, I had thought we were going to find a wide array of resources on the internet to draw from, and Slaggy and I, you know, we did our best, but we were not able to find any kind of comprehensive listing of game censorship, and I bet there's a whole world of game censorship examples out there that we have been unable to find, so
right.
I would love to hear about your experiences. And, you know, with that having been said, Slaggy, I think it's time to move on to another segment.
Yeah.
Rumor has it.
Man, we're just keeping that Adele 21 spirit alive, aren't we?
Until the next one comes out, we gotta, right?
I guess so. So rumor has it that Hyperdimension Neptunia Rebirth 2 is coming to the PC. This is from an ESRB rating. You know, this is kind of, speaking of the ESRB, it's rated T for teen. But, you know, it's funny, that's where we seem to find a lot of these rumors, is when they pop up on these rating boards.
Well, so, you know, why thanks, I go... Right?
Thanks, rating boards, you thanks, help us ESRB. Get rumors.
Why I go to these ESRB ratings for our rumors is because I typically find them pretty reliable.
Right.
I'm not super into talking about pure hearsay, I really prefer talking about rumors that have actual merit. And to me, an ESRB rumor is, it's practically an announcement without a press release at this point.
Right.
And so that is, you know, back in June, Hyperdimension Neptunia Rebirth 1 was submitted for PC ratings. So I personally kind of feel like, you know, Idea Factory has paid to have these games rated. I think it's likely that we'll be seeing both of the Rebirth releases coming to the PC platform in North America in the next few months.
Yeah.
And this week for our segment called Smash, or that used to be called Smash, that is currently new title pending, I want to call your attention to Polygon. Now, I have a lot of issues with Polygon by and large. If you follow me on Twitter, you probably already know what I'm talking about. But when they first started doing these big articles and focus features, we here at Game Buoy were very surprised and very happy to see these articles being so well written, so well thought out, and just being really like complete examinations of a topic in games. And this week is no different. We have an amazing piece on Polygon published on December 9th. And this one is The Fall of THQ.
Aww.
And this is just an incredible, super well-researched, it's incredibly well-sourced, in-depth look at how THQ went from being one of the biggest publishers in the world to going bankrupt and not existing at all. So I definitely think this article is worth reading. We're going to link it to you over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And I definitely recommend you check it out if you are at all interested in either THQ specifically or just generally how you go from publishing well-loved, licensed games and niche titles with huge fan bases to having to sell off all of your assets in a fire sale. It's a really heartbreaking, impacting read.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, there are a lot of problems with Polygon, but their features typically tend to be excellent, so.
Well, you know, it's like the Kotaku issue. Kotaku has historically published a lot of crap, but when they post good stuff, I try to point it out, because I will always encourage good writing. I may not want to feed bad articles, hits, and links, but I do definitely want to encourage good games writing, and this is good games writing.
Indeed.
All right, well then, we're just clipping it along at a good breeze now. We're all ready.
I said, hey, what's going on?
Slaggy, what did you play this week?
Borderlands 2! No, I'm kidding. So I've been playing Thief the Rhythm Curtain Call. And
Final Fantasy, yeah?
Yes, Final Fantasy.
I have to ask now, woohoo!
Right? And, you know, having a good time with that.
Let me ask you, I don't think you're a huge Dragon Quest fan, although correct me if I'm wrong.
I've never really played a lot of Dragon Quest games, but, you know, it's not out of not being a fan, it's just a...
No, I know, but you'll understand
not
why
being
I
a
asked.
Fan has an implication of not
well,
liking
it didn't
something.
In the context
okay.
I was asking. You're playing Theater Rhythm. Is this your first Theater Rhythm experience?
No, I have the original Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy.
Do you like the gameplay enough that you'll look into Theater Rhythm Dragon Quest?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, I enjoy the Owendon-inspired gameplay. You know, I think it's a really cute way to celebrate the music from these great games. And, you know, you can, like, you know, get levels on your characters. And, you know, it's cute that they put the little narratological spin on it with, like, you know, the land of chaos or whatever. And you have to collect Crystaria Musicala or whatever. I'm just throwing out Final Fantasy-ish sounding terms now. But, yeah, I mean, I love that it's got a huge library of songs built in already. And
great,
you know,
DLC support.
Exactly. So anyone who, you know, passed on the original Theater Rhythm definitely should pick it up. I also started my playthrough of Pokemon Alpha Sapphire. I have a Mudkip. I'm actually not that far yet. I've just been kind of, you know, it hasn't been as much of a focus this week. I'm not even at the first gym. I'm trying to just kind of, you know, it's not like there's any huge surprise. I've played all the Pokemon games. So I'm kind of like not really in any hurry. Something that I really like is in the PokéNav or whatever they call that, you know, touchscreen, you know, they always have like the PokéPhone or the Poké whatever. They have the different like apps and functionality. And, you know, that's been something that's been in the series a long time, but they have a like Pokédex feature in Alpha Sapphire and Omega Ruby that shows you if you've caught all the Pokémon in a region. Like, so I'm on route whatever, and it's like, oh, almost all the Pokémon caught, and I'm like, oh, which ones are left? And, you know, originally to find out if you caught all of them in a region, you'd have to have either like a strategy guide or look up a game facts or whatever. And I remember having like the strategy guides was like, okay, there's a 40% chance that there will be whatever, a female Nidoran, and a 60% chance of a male Nidoran, for example.
I kept the Nintendo Power insert of the original release of Pokemon for like 15 years because it had tables like that.
Right, and those used to be a huge, huge thing, and to the point where, you know, when these games would come out, the more recent ones, sites like Cerebee.net would, you know, be like...
They'd compile data. Tables, too.
They would compile tables so that... and it was really interesting because Captain Beck and I were talking about this around X and Y, that a lot of this information, one of the things that made X and Y really feel like a fresh start was the simultaneous release, and nobody knew this data.
Yeah, absolutely. Yet. It was a huge deal.
So, I mean, before you'd be like, oh, okay, I know I want to catch a Gligar, and I can get that on Route 42, there's a 10% chance, but... what this kind of does for me is, even though, yes, I could look this information up, I'm sure, it kind of makes me want to be like, oh, I want to catch them all. And I want to see what everything is on this route. And I really like the sneaking mechanic where you can sneak up on a Pokemon that's rustling in the grass. And, you know, grass rustling has always been an element in, not always, but, you know, it's been an element in a lot of the games so far. But what is significant about this time is that the Pokemon that you catch will have a special move. Like, I caught a... What did I catch? I caught a Poochyena, which is a dark type, wolfy, poochy thing.
Yeah.
And he,
I didn't mind
she,
pups.
She was a female, had a fire fang, which was a fire type move, which is
nice.
Really cool. So that's typically a move that a Poochyena would not know.
Yeah, I have a Zigzagoon that has charm.
Yeah, you named that Zigzagoon Zigazig-Ah, didn't you?
Yeah, it's Zigazig-Ah.
I really, really, really want a Zigazig-Ah.
I name all of my Pokemon, like, musical references or, like, really obscure high concept internet meme references.
Right, yeah. So I'm definitely looking forward to, you know, putting more time into it. You know,
I just want to say on the point you were making earlier, having that notification that you've got all Pokemon in an area is just a game changer. It means the world to me. I love it. It's such a worthwhile and valuable quality of life change right there.
And I mean, really, I think puts an element of exploration back in. Because if you're like, oh, I know this region's only going to have Rattata, Pidgey, and maybe a Spearow. But, like, I was in, you know, I'm not even at the first dungeon, the first gym yet. And it was like, oh, there are Pokemon you still haven't caught. And that's how I caught a Ralts, which is a psychic type. And so, like, I already have a psychic type on my team. And, yeah, I mean, like, I haven't even gone into the forest yet. So, I mean, you know, typically there's a forest you have to go through before you get to the first gym. And there's lots of trainers and stuff. So I'm, you know, hoping that a character will accompany me to give me free heals. I always love that.
Yeah.
And, but, like, definitely my Mudkip is way higher level at this point. There's no experience share yet. So kind of like, waiting for that.
Oh, I see. Yeah, you'll get one, and it won't be too long.
And kind of playing with the idea of raising up a water team, because I have a Lotad, which is a water grass type, and I realized, oh, that would nullify a lot of weaknesses. So
yeah, absolutely.
Having fun with that. And I've also been playing Warlords of Draenor, you know, trying to put some more time into it, really thinking about focusing on my Death Knight a little more, because I've actually really enjoyed tanking the early dungeon so far, struggling a little bit with healing on my Shaman, finding the mana regen issues to once again be kind of a struggle, which it typically is at the beginning of an expansion. So thinking I might shift my focus to my Death Knight, who, you know, has pretty much been my main otherwise, you know, ever since Wrath of the Lich King.
Well, as your gear gets better, I'm sure that'll be less of an issue, so fingers
crossed.
Oh,
and I definitely still intend to play my Shaman, just, you know, might focus a little more on my Death Knight.
All right. Well, excellent. Well, I'm going to use that as my segue, because I've also been playing a lot of World of Warcraft.
Yeah, you have. Better geared, biatch.
My gear score is now ahead of all of the current raid content.
Not like the mythics, right?
Oh, no, not the mythics, but I actually am at the point now where even, like, the non-LFR raids, like the real raids, would only give me very minimal upgrades.
Wow.
Which is cool. This is, you know, sort of what I was aiming for in the lead-up
to
the raids.
But heroic now is what normal used to be, so...
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't come into play for the point I'm making.
Yes, I'm saying is that you could go into heroic raids, which used to be normal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's unlikely that I will, but, you know, again, I'm very happy, I'm very well geared, I'm seeing all the content between pugs and looking for raids and looking for dungeons, doing all the little, you know, ins and outs, and really just having a really great time with this
topping content. The DPS chart.
Yeah, topping the DPS chart in raids and stuff even, which is really awesome.
Yeah, we teamed up for a little group quest the other day, and I was like, oh, you're doing like 12,000 DPS, I'm doing like 4,000.
And that was just on a random mob. Like, I wasn't even doing my rotation properly or anything.
Rub it in.
Let's see, I played the demo for Guilty Gear Xrd. My understanding is a lot of shops broke Street Date, and this game was available last week. I have been unable to find a copy, but as soon as I do, it will be mine. Really looking forward to it. The demo...
Yeah, the demo looks great.
It felt great. It feels like real Guilty Gear, despite being in 3D. You can't even tell it's 3D looking at it. It's so beautiful. We've talked a lot here on the show about how beautiful that game is, about how well done the transition of 3D is, and I absolutely just am stunned. I cannot wait to find a full copy of this game sometime this week. And last, but certainly not least, a game I didn't expect to talk about here, but I'm actually going to have probably the most to say about, is Freedom Wars for the Vita. We talked a lot about Freedom Wars as we were waiting for it to release, both in Japan and then in North America. And so I've been playing it now. You know, it is a vaguely Monhun-styled game, Monster Hunter, for those of you who are kind of new. But it's set in a post-apocalyptic world. You have guns, you have swords, you have knives, you know, very similar to a Monster Hunter-style game, as you'd expect. But the real interesting thing is that you also have a grappling hook. So the gameplay takes on an element of almost like Attack of Titan, if you're familiar with.
Oh.
You know, that anime series that is a huge hit. If you're into anime at all, you're familiar with that series. And, you know, you can use that grappling hook not just to grapple around the world, not just to grapple to catch onto the top of a monster that you're hunting. I say monster, they're really giant robots. You can also use it to do things like grapple onto a giant robot's leg and pull him over to make him topple and give you, like, a huge window to do extra damage in, which in these hunting games is, like, the biggest deal. Unlike most popular hunting games, the game is super story-focused. It reminds me a lot the story of Phantom Dust, which is another very cool post-apocalyptic game, very similar themes there. I got this game, it was on sale at Best Buy a couple weeks ago before Black Friday, for $14.99. I was like, alright, whatever, I know a lot of Vita people love this game. And now I'm playing it, I'm like, shit, I wish I'd gotten in on this hella sooner, like, this is so good! I'm absolutely loving it. I love the idea of a hunting-style game that takes its cues, again, from more like a movement-centric perspective. I just love everything about it. I love getting up onto a giant robot and having to use my knives to, like, hack off his missile turrets so he can no longer attack my party with his missiles. There's just, like, a whole layer of strategy involved in, like, scaling the monster and, like, attacking the specific weak points that would suit you best in your playstyle best. And there's not, like, a set strategy for all the robots that I'm aware of. I'm just really enjoying it. If you have a Vita and you're looking for a hunting game that's a little different and brings new ideas to the table, I definitely recommend you check out Freedom Wars.
Wonderful.
Saggy, if you'd like to get us started on them social links.
Yes, so we love hearing from you.
We love it.
And like we mentioned earlier, please feel free to hashtag GameBooyExtraUs, talking about censorship in gaming this week.
Please, please, please.
You can always interact with us. You know, we say you can always tweet us because that's kind of our favorite social network, but you can interact with us on any of our social sites. You can mail us at mailbooy@gamebooy.org.
Mailbooy@gamebooy.org.
We'll give you all that information shortly, but I'd like to go over to Twitter where we got some tweets. Yes, we got some tweetily tweets. Since our last episode, since posting the episode about World of Warcraft. Our first tweet comes from the William Brown on Twitter, saying this was on December 2nd, still waiting for realm maintenance to finish, so taking a bath and listening to Spike Point and Sidekick talk about WoW on GameBooy.org. Yeah, that was when the, not the huge content patch, but a little patch to, you know, get the raids, right? That's when the raids officially launched.
What date was that?
December 2nd. So I think that's like, yeah, that was the day where it was down all day, pretty much. And so, we're glad that
Yeah, that was the day that the raids went up.
We're glad that you invited us to your bath time, the William Brown.
Aw.
Hey. Oh, hey, DJ.
Can you not objectify all of our listeners? Come on.
I'm only objectifying the two of them. Oh, hey, DJ on Twitter responds to our Smash episode saying that Smash Wii U is his preferred Smash game. And Peach, of course.
Pinkle Peach.
Not Pinkle Peach. Wrong name, yo.
I was making a joke. Come on.
Yeah, man. But DJ can play a mean Peach. We got a tweet.
Why isn't there a pink gold Peach skin for Peach?
I don't know.
Now I'm mad. I'm sorry. Go on.
Oh, you. Ikuma JP says, yay, new Game Buoy episode, with a little musical note, which I assume is, like, I mean, I'm not assuming, but it makes me think of, like, in Animal Crossing, when the little animals are happy and they have, like, a little musical note.
Oh my gosh, that's adorable.
It's very cute.
Thank you so much for your kind words.
Emiru69 said, I enjoyed so much of the last episode of GameBuoy.org. I finally understand all that Smash terminology. Yay! Ikuma JP also responded with Bandai Namco and then the little XD laughing emoticon.
Yeah.
You worked on it, and now I've got to work on Koei Tecmo, it's not say Temco. Well, it's because Namco, I'm more used to Namco. You know, Namco's been around longer, I think, right? I mean, I would assume. So I think, you know, when I think of Tecmo, you know, I just go to Temco because of Namco. So now I've got to work on saying Koei Tecmo in the mirror. Unique New York. Koei Tecmo. We have a tweet from, Sky, better known as Rob Roberts, saying that Shane, you know, who, you might recognize from appearances on the, Reading is Fundamental podcast, our RuPaul podcast, and for his work on Horde House as well. He had said, I could talk about the Suikoden series for hours, and so Rob says, I think GameBooey.org should consider you for a Suikoden special.
I'm pretty sure I've talked about Suikoden with Shane, and I just have to say, if he's game, I'd be game. I love Suikoden.
I'm like, I better get that on PSN and talk about my newcomer's perspective to this classic JRPG.
Yeah, absolutely. We should, you know, whether Shane is interested or not, we should definitely pencil in Suikoden for a second half 2015 episode.
I'm like, we already got so many ideas. The BioWare, you know, episode that one of our listeners had.
Well, we're lucky to have awesome listeners.
Right? And last but certainly not least, Gamer Fox included us on a Fall of Friday.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. There was one more tweet coming from Clerical Errors, and it was in response to our post that the game Afterburner Climax is going to be delisted from Xbox Live Arcade and PSN later this month. It'll be permanently delisted on December 24th. It costs, what, $10 for this classic shmup? And Clerical Errors said, ah! So I'm assuming that means that you either picked it up or that you're, like, upset or both. But, yeah, there's no reason that they really need to be delisting that, huh? It's kind of a bummer, and so soon, so that's why we put the word out there for that. So I'm glad that I caught that, because it gave us a chance to remind you, if you are a fan of the classic arcade shmup, Afterburner Climax, it's your last chance to get it on Xbox Live Arcade for X360 or PSN for PS3.
Yeah, absolutely. That's 12/24 it comes down, right?
Yeah. Oh, apparently Sega Nerds, which is a fan site, I assume,
yeah,
are speculating that it's about licensing agreement.
Oh, almost certainly. Almost
because
certainly.
There are real-world aircraft in this game.
Yeah, and we've seen that happen with several Sega racing games, in fact.
Outrun Online Arcade.
Exactly. And I don't even think that was the only one, but whatever.
That was the one named in this article. So
we also have a real quick update on news that just hit within the last hour.
Oh, timely.
There was an interview with Shinji Hashimoto-san with Game Watch.
Game & Watch?
Discussing the surprise announcement of the PlayStation 4 release of Final Fantasy X/X-2 and Final Fantasy VII. And Hashimoto-san was asked by Game Watch why Square Enix is bringing these titles as ports/re-releases for the new generation consoles now. And Hashimoto's response, and I quote, actually, the re-releases won't be limited to Final Fantasy VII and Final Fantasy X/X-2. Other Final Fantasy titles could arrive for the PlayStation 4 as well.
Final Fantasy VIII.
We have been planning to create a great ecosystem for the series, but for now, most titles are only available for PS3 and PS Vita. Also, China is getting its first home console in years, as an aside because they're finally getting the PS4, and we would like to bring the long-awaited masterpieces to the Chinese players as well. PlayStation 4 is the best way to make this happen. Now, this would also help the console sell better in the region and worldwide.
Yeah, I will gladly buy Final Fantasy VIII on PS4.
Yeah, I'm thinking about this, like, if they're serious about bringing all Final Fantasies to PS4...
I would gladly buy Final Fantasy VI on PS4.
I will buy 12, because 12 needs a re-release so bad. I love Final
Fantasy 12
needs
an HD remaster, please.
I would take it as it is. That game is still
gorgeous.
I know.
I'm just saying that game deserves an HD remaster.
I agree. I would probably upgrade the Final Fantasy XIII trilogy. I like those games. I don't care. I would definitely buy 6. I would love it if that new port of Final Fantasy 1 that just came out in Japan on 3DS next week, I would love to have that on PS4. I would definitely love to play the Final Fantasy 3 and Final Fantasy 4 3D games on PS4. Honestly, Square Enix, I love the Final Fantasy series, just bring them all.
They could have a little app like the Crystarium Final Fabulous Fantasia.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
So trademarking that.
Just that news just came in.
Final Fabulous Fantasia. Watch for it. My new Final Fantasy podcast coming 2015.
Let's go.
All right. We want to thank you for tuning in today. We love your feedback. We love your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews.
Love them.
Just go on iTunes and search for Game Buoy. We will pop up, I hope. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/GameBuoy. We effing love Twitter.
We're on Twitter
at GameBuoy.org, DOTORG.
GameBuoy.org. DOTO is spelled out, DOTORG.
On Tumblr at gamebuoy.tumblr.com. Google Plus is at plus.google.com/plus/GameBuoy.org. No dot in there. It wouldn't let us for some reason. And you can email us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
GameBuoy@mailbuoy.org.
No!
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
And our home base is GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
Where you can find all 69 of our episodes to date and all future episodes.
All 69.
Hey now.
You're an all-star.
No. Even though I was going there too. Of course, we also have easy links to our social media there. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to you to shout out.
As ever and always, my first shout out goes to Koopa Club. That is Koopa with a Q and Club with a K. Koopa Club is an award-winning podcast about Nintendo and gaming with an LGBT twist.
Who gave them an award?
Their moms.
Oh, that's nice.
Also be remiss not to mention VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. As well as the Game Over Takeover, your one-stop shop to go to for geekery galore.
Hey, I just guessed it.
Show I think you just guessed it this week.
I just guessed it on the episode Food, Florida, and Fun, which hopefully will be online soon.
I must shout out Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice.
Oh, those old queens.
And from whom I steal ever so many of my cues.
Just kidding. I love you.
And last but not least in the gaming sphere, I need to mention the Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk.
Perfect.
In non-gaming podcasts, I want to shout out, of course, to our seasonal show, Reading is Fundamental.
Yes, God.
A look at RuPaul's Drag Race that airs after the new episode's debut.
And
that, of course, is you, me, Rob Roberts, and Delvin from VG Realness. And I believe we're planning to resume that in the next couple weeks.
Yes, we just finally got the announcement of all the queens from season 7, so please look forward to that.
Excellent. Of course, I also want to point you in the direction of the Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, the Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. As well as X Nation over at culturalwormhole.blogspot.com, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants, and last but in no way least, Tables, Ladders, and Podcast, a professional wrestling podcast for the common man. Slaggy, why don't you take us to a game bar?
Game Bar is the podcast that fills your brain space with hours of gay video game commentary. They're part of the Hunty Bunch, and, you know, they're basically the Lindsay Lohan version of the Prairie Home Companion, but for video games. I'd also like to shout out to two fantastic shows over on the Voice of Geeks Network. That's VOG Network. That's VogNetwork.com, where you can log in and earn points and interact live with many of these shows. There is Girls Gone WoW, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO with Syl and friends. And Horde House, place for all things online gaming, but never too seriously. I'd also be remiss not to mention La Palanca Podcast, the podcast por y para gay gamers latinoamericanos en español. You know, definitely filling a much-needed space for gay, queer gaming content in Latin America. Fantastic. As ever and always, we like to give tribute to Zelda Reorchestrated, who was responsible for our beautiful theme music, and, you know, if we ever be porting out a 40 for them, they were the project that aimed to reorchestrate Zelda music in beautiful symphonic sound.
All right, well, with all of that having been said, I want to thank you all out there in Internet Radio Land.
Thank you for being a friend.
Well, that too. Thank you all for spending this lovely Sunday afternoon with us. I hope you've had as much fun listening as we've had talking. We're coming up on the end of the year celebratory stuff, so please look forward to that. And until next time, keep gaming, keep thinking, and Kenryok Okir.
Ken and Ryo are doing what? Did I say Rio?
Well, I guess that was an interesting mic check. You ready to go?
Are you ready to play? I want pizza. I think we're just about ready to build the perfect pizza. Give me pizza.
6 euros, 5, whatever that L thing is.
Pounds?
Pounds. 5 pounds.
I thought you were an Anglophile.
I thought I was, too. Time for us to dig into the meat and potatoes of why we're here this week.
One potato, two potato.
I'm sorry, I couldn't resist.
Are you quite done?
Yes.